Well, this is Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. And if we want calls, why, we will ask for them. But right now we have this on the line, Christine Hoff Sommers. We're going to be talking about her a book, which she's co-authored with Sally Satel, M.D. And, of course, the book is entitled One Nation Under Therapy. Thank you so much for being with us.
Very nice to be here.
Well, look, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself? I've read your biography, but for our listeners who don't know who are you and why did you write a book about a psychotherapy and the programs, really, that are being utilized in our schools and grief counseling and elsewhere, which are having such disastrous effects on our people?
Well, I am a philosophy professor of many years. I taught ethics and the history of philosophy at Clark University outside Boston. And then I moved to a think tank in Washington called the American Enterprise Institute. That's where I met Dr. Sally Satel. She's a lecturer in psychology at Yale Medical School, as well as a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI. And I've written books that sort of, they're philosophical, but they have, you know, all sorts of consequences for public policy. I've written on feminism, a book called Who Stole Feminism?, and a book called The War Against Boys. And my latest book with Dr. Satel is One Nation Under Therapy. And we became concerned that too many people are just involved in a kind of overindulgence in their personal lives and being in touch with their feelings and talking about their emotions and carrying on and assuming they're fragile, assuming our children are hothouse flowers who can't cope. It's not that we're against therapy for people who genuinely need it. My co-author is a psychiatrist and treats people, and we both believe that current practices are getting better and better. But most people are not mental patients. Most people do not suffer from clinical disorders, and you shouldn't treat yourself as if you do.
And, of course, you point out in your book that there's a very conscious effort in many of our schools to do away with any sort of a competition at all. We shouldn't play tag because, oh, my goodness, how would the person who's tagged feel? And we shouldn't play dodgeball because, and you give some of these incredible examples.
Chairs. Someone might not have a chair. A child would feel left out. There's a national movement against using red pens because if a child sees too many corrections in this harsh color, the preferred color now is lavender. I appeared on a comedy program, the Daily Show, and the host was shocked that they were doing this. He said, "Well, why don't they pour potpourri on the paper before they return it?" I mean, it's this absolutely out of control hyper protectiveness that's going on with mostly middle class children. There's this fantasy their parents have that if you could insulate them from all frustration, disappointment, adversity. I'm not talking about harm. Every parent has to want, every decent adult wants to protect children from cruelty, from harm. But I'm talking about insulating them from failure, which happens to everyone. Insulating them from the bad feelings that come from not doing as well as they can, but yet not insisting they do well. So we have kids that are overpraised. There's been trophy inflation in sports. There are now teams in Massachusetts of Little League that have not only a no score rule, but a no strikeout rule, so that nobody supposedly has a bad experience.
Now let's hold that thought, and we'll be back here in just a moment as we bring some other stations on board our network here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Christina Hoff Sommers, who is actually a philosophy professor, and she teaches it, taught at Clark University. Now she's with the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., and she's co-written a book with Sally Satel, M.D., entitled One Nation Under Therapy. how the helping culture is eroding self-reliance. And they give all sorts of examples of things that are happening in our schools today that are to discourage competition, not to bring children into any sort of conflict, to wrap them in a bubble, so that when they get in the real world, how do these children absolutely cope when they've been discouraged from competition of any sort, and yet the real world is a competitive world?
Yes, and it's also an interesting world. It's not that you help children when you deny them the possibility for the adventure of competition, and with that comes the possibility of failure. But people find that intriguing, engaging. Kids relish competition. So to try to take it out of our schools, to try to take it out of our playgrounds, not only prepares them badly for the future, but deprives them of the sort of healthy, vigorous pastimes they need for their own development. So what we try to do is to find, is there any evidence that wrapping children in cotton wool helps them in their future lives? And we found very little, and quite a bit of evidence to the contrary, that a certain amount of stoicism is that teaching children to be self-reliant, to take responsibility for their behavior. You have no idea how many parents, if the teacher censures them in some way or gives them a poor grade, your parents will now go and complain to the teacher and take issue with the teacher, not be angry at the child. Now, that is harmful to kids. It's misplaced sort of concern and very damaging, we try to show.
And, of course, you point out in your book that we have so many people, the grief counselors, and whenever there's a tragedy of any sort, you have all the grief counselors coming in to, of course, help people get through that period of grief, whereas grief is a normal response when there's a traumatic situation.
And guess what? Most people are surprised to find that they have the strength to cope. Not that it's easy. There's nothing easy about being a human being. The human condition is fraught with danger and occasions for misery and unhappiness and distress. And most of us are a little neurotic. We're not denying that for one moment. But psychologists don't have the cure for the human condition. It's not a pathology in need of medication. There is a limited set of disabilities which psychiatrists have made profound progress. And if you have a member of your family who has a clinical disorder, get them to a psychiatrist. They would go to any doctor if they had something wrong with them.
Hold that thought just for a moment as we bring on our stations back again here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Christina Hoff Summers. We're talking about a book she co-authored with Sally Satel, MD, called One Nation Under Therapy, How the Helping Culture is Eroding Self-Reliance. And we were simply talking about what happens. Your children go to school and this teacher gets after them. The child has been misbehaving or for whatever the reason. And, of course, then the teacher is chastised for daring to get after the child. And there's almost a desire to keep this child from facing the reality of what life is really all about. And then we were beginning to talk about the grief counselors. And, of course, when some terrible event happens, whether it be the tsunami, whether it be an earthquake, whether it be the loss of a loved one, but they have the grief counselors who want to come in and help you with your grief. And yet, of course, the point that is made in the book is grief is a normal response to a tragedy. So we want to pick up that story there.
It has gone so out of control that recently a baby elephant died in the Houston Municipal Zoo. And at taxpayer expense, they brought in grief counselors.
Was that for the other elephants?
No, to comfort the zookeepers.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, one can be very attached to an animal. I have been very attached to animals. I don't deny there is grief. But you can cope. The average person can cope with all sorts of grief. Very few people fall into what's known as morbid grief. Now, that can happen, and you might need special help, but it's very bad. See, what we would urge people who think that what we call therapism, this whole therapeutic approach to life, just to turn everything into a psychofest, what we suggest is that you should reconsider. Does this really make people happy, effective? Do we flourish under a republic of feelings? And the answer we kept coming was no, that there's a great deal to be said for reticence, for stoicism, and self-reliance.
And, of course, you point about that, you know, there have been books written about how, you know, we've really got to get away from this masculine man, and they're really doing everything they can to sort of erode masculinity, and any man who's really masculine, there's something wrong with him.
Well, actually, my interest in this topic grew out of my earlier book, which was called The War Against Boys, because I found that my colleagues and like the Harvard Graduate School of Education or the Wellesley Center for Research on Women or psychologists and other academics at various institutions decided that masculinity was a sort of disordered that boys needed to be cured of or rescued from. Bill Pollack is a psychologist at Harvard who thinks that there's this affliction, you know, being a boy means they're not in touch with their feelings, and he has all of these exercises to reconnect boys emotionally. And I tried to find an iota of evidence that there's something wrong with boys, that they need to be talking about their feelings. In fact, the vast majority of boys are healthy. They're focused in the world outside themselves. Now, as an ethics professor, I can tell you we need to help them build character. For a successful life, they need spiritual, they need moral values. But they don't need psychobabble. And that's what we're offering in huge doses. And it seems to be irresistible to the American middle-class family.
Well, how about this idea of a self-fulfillment, this idea that I'm really pretty good, give them this idea that, they're really superiority, that the Americans, they're an American and they're better than other people.
Well, one of the things that you may be alluding to is in the self-esteem movement.
Oh, self-esteem movement, right.
They teach the kids that I'm wonderful, the wonder of me, celebrate me. Even the Girl Scouts of America has been a little too carried away with this self-esteem curriculum, and they have something called Uniquely Me, where girls play a game getting to know me called the Me-O-Meter. It's me, me, me. And then when you get tired of talking about me, they have another game called What Do You Think of Me? I mean, it's self-parody. And yet it's the Girl Scouts of America, and it was funded $2.7 million but from a major corporation, Unilever. This is just, it's in our workplace. There's something called emotional intelligence coaches. And these poor managers have to go away for entire weekends and engage in all of this. It's called an emotions inventory, and they learn to manage, to track their emotions from second to second. If you're that captive to your own emotions, you are depressed. That's what depression is. I mean, my co-author is a psychiatrist. She treats people who can't stop thinking about their feelings and can't get out and think about other things in the world, and they are the ones that need help. It's almost as if we're taking, especially in the schools, healthy repressors and turning them into anxious depressives.
Well, you talk about teachers assigning essays that require students to reveal personal tragedy. Now, why would you want to have them dwell on personal tragedies? You would think you'd want to get them to get away from the personal tragedies and get on with their lives.
Well, exactly. But they have been told, and schools of education seem to believe, that the best way to get a student to write is for them to talk about themselves, me, all, about my feelings and how this affects me. Well, all of that does, best we can tell, is encourage narcissism and increasingly cuts children off from the great world outside themselves. What a teacher must do, what a classroom must do, an educational system, if it's effective, is to trigger the imagination, curiosity about things outside yourself. And the more exotic and remote, the better. Get outside yourself. But increasingly, teachers are encouraged to assign books where children read about people like themselves. And where there's a lot of emotional venting and so forth. Very misguided. This whole idea of venting, is if you don't feel this and name this feeling, then it's going to be harmful to you. That's nonsense. There's just no evidence of that. In fact, reticence, holding your feelings back, is for many people highly adaptive and makes them happy.
Well, now, of course, one of the things you write about is how even the Catholic Church came to rely on psychiatry for priests who abuse children rather than holding them accountable for their sins. It almost means that today we're sort of abandoning the concept of sin and, well, if you're a sinner, why what you need is a psychiatrist.
Right. We have a chapter called Sin to Syndrome where we show that the whole concept of good and evil, right and wrong, have collapsed into don't blame me, blame my syndrome. It wasn't me, it was my amygdala. It's not, we have we reproduce a cartoon from Non Sequitur, a cartoonist that is a cartoon franchise, and they say there's a man that's coming into a mental health clinic, and there's a directory, and it says first floor, mother did it, second floor, father did it, third floor, society's to blame. And what we say is, first of all, get over it. It almost doesn't matter who's to blame. You have a life to live. You have a whole world outside to explore. And if you're going to spend too much of your time trying to figure out what mother did and what happened when I was three and how can I resolve this dilemma that, you know, that I wasn't chosen for basketball in seventh grade or whatever. You're wasting your time. It's making you more unhappy.
Well, the idea, the belief that uninhibited emotional openness is essential to mental health. In other words, you got to talk about all of your emotional problems and all the things that you're thinking of. Doesn't that actually create more in the way of emotional problems? Certainly, you know, some of these experiments that were done by Carl Rogers and Maslow, you know, they created problems in people who didn't have any problems before.
Well, this can happen. Is it suddenly, as I said, you could be a healthy, curious, effective human being, and then you get captive to this therapeutic worldview, become very boring, I must say, because people don't want to hear you that much carrying on about your past. You're much more interesting if you're an expert on things outside yourself. Now, there may be a subcategory of people that are just like to do this. That's just their aesthetic choice. They want to talk about themselves. They want to go into therapy and explore what they think, you know, makes them tick. That's fine. We're not against it if you want to do it. But don't impose it on others. And we certainly don't want to have an entire school system that's sort of carried away with this idea of therapeutic pedagogy, these therapeutic teaching methods that make students dwell on their inner struggles and talk endlessly about the feelings that they have at that moment. There's an exercise that Dan Goleman is kind of a guru of emotional education. And he recommends, he praises a school where when the teacher calls roll, says Tommy, Susie, Cindy, the child doesn't say here. The child engages in what he calls emotion identification. It's called self-science. The self-science people call it an emotion inventory. This is ridiculous. This does nothing to help children. It just encourages self-absorption, narcissism, and it can even be depressing for some kids.
Well, of course, we see the drive today for mental health screening for every child in America. Now, certainly a mental health screening for perhaps for some children who have emotional disorders, but my concern is that a lot of this mental health screening may actually lead to mental disease or focusing at children introspectively rather than being allowed to be just kids.
Well, as every parent knows, most kids go through brief periods where they seem quite mad to their parents, but they're brief and they're self-correcting, not always. And I always have that caveat. There are kids who are genuinely in distress, but they are very much the minority. The average kid will go through. Now, if we have someone screening all kids, we do not yet have a sufficiently fine-tuned method to subject all children to screening. And not, you know, what would happen is there would be just vast numbers of false positives. Our entire sort of mental health infrastructure would buckle. It cannot handle having, you know, millions of kids referred for further observation. I mean, it's good that teachers become more educated to identify kids who really are severely depressed or, my goodness, have a bipolar disorder or something serious. The vast majority of kids, what we worry about, my co-author, a psychiatrist and I, is what we call emotional correctness, that there's an increasingly narrow range of ways to be. And if you fall outside that range, you're going to be medicated. Any healthy, thriving child, especially boys, are going to go through periods where they're a little outside the range. And one psychologist said that if Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer were to come alive and be here today, they would be diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and put on Ritalin.
Well, what are your feelings about the use of Ritalin? Many psychiatrists say this is wonderful for children.
We looked at it quite carefully, and of course, as I said, my co-author is a psychiatrist. There is no question that there is a condition of hyperactivity attention deficit disorder, and that Ritalin helps children who genuinely have it. But it is overprescribed. In some communities, as many as 20% of the kids, mostly boys, are being medicated. I think even its greatest proponents will agree that it's overprescribed. Now, there may be areas where it's underprescribed. Some say in inner city kids are not getting enough attention and kids that could benefit from it. So we're not against it, but we really think it should be the last resort after other methods have been tried. There are a lot of American kids who are just have insufficient discipline in their lives.
Hold that stuff right there. This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dennegan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president
of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our 4-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol, 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Christina Hoff Sommers, her book, One Nation Under Therapy. And where can people actually get copies of the book?
Well, they can call to go up to Amazon.com or go to OneNationUnderTherapy.com.
One Nation Under Therapy. You have a website then, okay.
Yes.
All right, now you have a chapter in here on sin to syndrome. Basically, what are you trying to point out? You're trying to point out that we don't talk enough about sin. We always try to explain everything on some sort of a psychological problem.
Well, it's just that people have stopped talking about vice and virtue and character development. In our schools, there is so much psychobabble and insufficient talk about, you know, good character. About self-discipline and self-reliance and striving for excellence. What happened to those things? Those serve us much better than, you know, trying to engage in this kind of mass analysis or these self-esteem exercises or these feelings exercises. Just a good foundation in ethics. And it turns out it's very good for your mental health. to have good values, it's your best bet. You could still have something wrong with you because there are mental illnesses and people need help. But the average person, if you want to be happy, you probably have to have your life in some kind of moral order, and that starts in childhood. You have to be habituated towards good behavior. There are so many parents right now who are failing to do that. They are raising spoiled, self-involved brats. If the teacher corrects them, they take the side of the student, and the child, not the teacher. Talk to any educator, and they have legions of stories about out-of-control kids and parents who won't help the teacher, who take the child's side. So we're very worried that, you know, you're treating a child as a fragile mental patient instead of a human being with a soul who needs guidance, who needs a moral compass, who needs a strong sense of right and wrong, who needs to know that there is evil in the world, and that, it even goes so far as our schools are now shying away from, in any way, praising the Western tradition or praising our democratic tradition in the United States, because that's thought, falsely, I would add, that it's thought to hurt the feelings of children from other cultures.
Well, now, of course, how did we get to the mess we're in today? In other words, at one time, why are schools taught strong values? The families taught strong values, and we seem to have gotten away from those fundamental things which are so important to mold the character of our children.
Well, I think what happened is people, two things. The psychological, psychiatric profession oversold what it could do. As I said, they're very good at helping people that have serious mental disorders. It's never been better, and it's going to get better. So we have nothing but positive news for anyone who has the misfortune of having someone in their family who's got a serious mental disorder. There's a lot of help to be had. But most people do not have these diseases. Most of us are healthy. Yes, we have our ups and downs, but your best bet is to develop your spiritual and ethical values to guide you through life. But what happened was people began to think that psychology could solve everything. This happened in the 60s and 70s. Oh, if you just went to a group therapy and acted out, you know, all of your deepest longings and desires, and if it felt good, do it. And there were all of these injunctions, these encouragements that came from this popularization of psychology. Now, it was discredited, and people sort of stopped talking that way by the 80s, but it's remain strong in schools of education and in the popular culture.
So what is the solution? How are we going to get back to a society based upon values?
What we hope is that by reading our book, a lot of people will feel vindicated. What they knew in their bones was true about what children need and what a society needs, that they can have some faith in their own common sense. And what we've tried to do is sort of bolster people, not just with stories, because our book has a lot of data. It's buried in footnotes, but it's there. We don't just assert something. We show that it's true according to the state-of-the-art research. So whether or not, you know, is it good to have students spend a lot of part of their day dwelling on their emotions, or does it harm them if they lose at a game, or they play chase, and they're, you know, there's all this excitement and fear of being, you know, tagged out and so forth. We have very good reports from psychologists and experts on playground dynamics, saying with good research that, in the most case, that this is very misguided.
And I agree with you totally. Well, I think it's a fascinating book. And when we get back, I will invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this book just talks about so much of this emphasis on self-esteem. We just want our kids to feel good about themselves. Well, if they can't compete, if they can't address adversity when they get out in the real world, they're not going to feel good about themselves. We have too many kids who have too much self-esteem and not enough capability, and I think that that's one of the things that themes of the book. It's well worthwhile. Give us a call, the 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Christina Hoff Summers, and she's a fellow at the, would you call yourself a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute?
Yes.
All right, a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and of course she's a former philosophy professor. Our telephone number here, if you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Her book, One Nation Under Therapy. And believe me, there are so many people who are taking psychotropic drugs today that I'm really very, very concerned, especially as it gets into the children. And so many of the issues need to be addressed and addressed directly rather than necessarily taking a pill. Not that there isn't a place for medication, but I think that Dr. Summers will agree that this certainly is not the solution. Now, you have a section in here on cancer, and of course there's a tremendous emotional turmoil that comes with finding that you have a cancer, but what's the solution to this?
Well, people vary. What worried us is that a lot of people are pressured into a group therapy setting, and for a while there were these reports that it could greatly enhance your chances of surviving. That turned out to be a grave exaggeration. It's helpful to those who want it, who have that mode. If that's your style, if you are the sort of person who wants to get together with people you don't know well and talk about it, and that may help you. And if that's the case, we're not against it. Of course not. But what we found is a lot of people were sort of bullied into seeing, into entering a therapy or taking on counseling. And it certainly helps you to get good information and to be guided on, you know, how to cope and so forth. But another thing we found is that people are strengthened by how they view themselves. If we have a society that where you look at a severe setback, a diagnosis with a disease or something, and you've been trained to see yourself as passive, helpless, in need of expert intervention, you'll probably react that way. But other people react to a challenge like that as it triggers all sorts of this kind of fighting spirit. And this is very effective for people, is not to be passive and not to be hopeless, but to hang on to your hope and hang on to your strength and do what you can to get better. It just, you know, even for something like a disease, it just turns out that old-fashioned resilience and faith in yourself and, working with the people that you know who are close to you, this seems to work better than some of the therapies that are out there.
Well, of course, when I practiced medicine, why you knew when people found they were going to have cancer, usually it would be the stage of denial and then the stage of anger and then the stage of a depression, and then you came out the far end and you decided you were going to try to get well or live with it or make your preparations. But if you didn't go through those steps, and of course my concern would be that the therapist might get in there and somehow, you know, get the person when they're depressed and just keep going over this again and getting them looking about all of their innermost feelings and might very well prolong the natural stages that people go through faced with a life-threatening situation.
Exactly, and but the important thing is that everybody has a different coping style, and you must keep that in mind, that there's not a one-size-fits-all for psychotherapy, and yet this is what we're doing. We're doing it in our classrooms, we're doing it in our hospitals, we're doing it even in corporate America, this kind of emotional correctness. And, you know, if my co-author, Sally Satel, if we thought that overall this therapeutic approach was kind and gentle and comforting and helpful, we wouldn't be opposed to it. We'd be in favor of it. We'd be advertising it. We would have written a book in favor of it. We just find that it's not coming through with its promise. It's falling seriously short, and people should know what exactly can psychotherapy do and what it cannot do. So far, it has not been able to alleviate, cure the human condition.
Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, one of your last chapters in the book deals with September 11th, and certainly the grief counselors. They seem to made a great thing out of the grief counseling for people who are involved in 911. And of course, there were so many tragedies and so many people lost a loved one there. But how do you cope with that? And can the grief counselor really help most people?
Well, thousands and thousands of grief counselors headed for New York City. Millions of dollars were allocated for mental health problems. And it just turns out it was a mental health crisis that never happened. And Americans, the way the British did in the Blitz, because that was over a long period of time. But here, majority of people, even those close to Ground Zero, were coped. And they saw them very strongly. They saw what happened in moral terms. They saw it as an outrageous evil, that was inflicted on the United States by these terrorists. And they wanted to take action. They did not fall apart mentally. No. In fact, we have very good evidence that you would have thought there would have been an increase in prescriptions for sedatives or for tranquilizers. It didn't happen. There was not, if there were people who had pre-existing mental conditions and they were in bad shape, but they started out that way. The average person was able to deal with it, even in New York City. Even kids in schools close to Ground Zero. They finally got tired of these psychobabblers that came in and wanted them to talk about what, they just were begging. The New York Times quoted some kids saying, please let us do math. No more counselors.
And of course, what you want to do is you want to keep your mind busy in this time so you don't tend to dwell on this.
Exactly.
If you're busy, if you're working, if you're involved in sports, if you're doing things, you're not going to think of that terrible experience.
Right. That's quite right.
And then, of course, you talk about this idea of the fragile child. Oh, how fragile our children are. If we just, we can't expose them to much of anything. And I think that you made the points there very, very well, that, of course, this is really an exaggeration. Then you talk about the post-traumatic stress syndrome. And what is the post-traumatic stress syndrome? Is it perhaps referred to too often today?
Oh, absolutely. Now, PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, is a genuine affliction that can occur after you experience some, you know, life-threatening cataclysmic event, or, you know, a hideous, horrendous car accident, or even, you know, a soldier in combat. These can be cause sleeplessness and, you know, reliving the experience over and over again. You just can't get on with your life. Point is, this doesn't happen to very many people. Majority of people self-correct very quickly and do not need. In fact, you know what happens to most people? They won't tell you this in the media because they're so carried away with PTSD and everything bad. Most people experience post-traumatic growth syndrome, which is that after a life-threatening experience, you become stronger. You become more philosophical. You become more spiritual. You become closer to the people. I mean, not everyone, but many, many people will tell you that's what happens. But again, our media is carried away with victimology, with teaching you that you cannot cope, you will not cope, you need help.
And of course, one of the things you point out in your book is the fact that this idea, oh, our kids are just getting so much homework in high school, oh my goodness, or grammar, middle school, they're putting under so much stress to do their homework. But don't we really need to push young people to become accomplishers?
Well, of course. This is the thing. We are shortchanging a whole generation of American kids because they're going to enter a world, a global economy, where there's intense competition. Where, as I said, where children were graded with red pens, not lavender happy faces. American kids, they don't have a problem with self-esteem. Our kids feel pretty good about themselves if you do comparative studies, but they perform either in the middle or at the bottom. Compared to their counterparts in nations like Taiwan and Korea and China, India, even, you know, some of the European countries, they're lagging behind. Now, the way to solve this is not to move towards more therapeutic pedagogy, therapeutic teaching methods. It's by making the classroom and the curriculum more rigorous, challenging kids to excellence. And the sad thing is that, you know, there's a small group of kids, upper middle class kids, who are very competitive. They want to go to the elite schools. It's never been harder to get in. So they work very hard, and they jump through hoops. If they have to write stories about feelings, they'll do it. The majority of kids are not that competitive. They're not trying to get into elite schools. A third of them don't go to college at all. They're fine with being told, don't worry, be happy, you're wonderful, celebrate yourself. You know, what child wouldn't welcome that? So what we're really hurting are those kids who are less motivated, which is the majority.
But, of course, they should be motivated because they have to realize that it's a tough old world out there. And if you want to be mediocre all of your life, why, you start out mediocre. If you excel, you don't even have to be that terribly smart. But if you apply yourself, why, you can accomplish great things. But it requires application.
That's right, and what we point out is this is a country that was founded on what social historians call the American Creed. And the American Creed is a philosophy that emphasizes self-reliance, fortitude, this stoicism, this can-do, problem-solving attitude, of course, the Judeo-Christian ethic. Therapism is a rival. It's a rival to that. It's trying to replace it. Instead of seeing its human beings as strong, they emphasize vulnerability and fragility. Instead of thinking about fortitude, they talk about neediness and victimhood. And they think that you need all sorts of experts to help you with your setbacks, your failures, your disappointments. You can't cope on your own. It's the very opposite of the creed, and that creed made this nation great because people would have that pioneer spirit. Now, I don't think that we should be changing the American character without the benefit of a national discussion.
But, of course, they are changing the American character, and they've done a great job of getting almost a whole generation of young people, and they're, you know, involved with so many other things outside of scholastics and excelling. Fortunately, some of our sports, they still are trying to win. But there's almost an attitude, you don't want to be a winner, because think how bad the people who are going to lose are going to feel. And the idea, you know, to do away with competition in our schools has to be organized madness or something far more sinister.
That's right. But I do feel this is an effort, perhaps not conscious, maybe they haven't thought it through, but by the school system and others to just change the creed into this psychologically grounded replacement.
And are you suggesting this is part of some sort of an organized effort?
No, it's more of a just a conspiracy of good intentions. people who think they're helping, who think they're nice, kind, by, you know, if you protect a child from playing tag, or you protect someone in the workplace from hard feelings and so forth, that you're making us better, stronger, more fulfilled, happier. But you're not. I mean, it just turns out that people are more complicated than that. They need to compete, they enjoy it, and they relish it, especially young people. It brings out the best. And they need, very importantly, they need how to know how to cope with challenge and setbacks and failure and adversity. If you insulate a child from that, you take away from them something critical to healthy development.
And I really think this is one of the great tragedies of modern education, is that we're not preparing children for the real world. We're preparing them for a cocoon, which they're going to soon grow out of, and when they do, why, of course, I think a lot of them are going to be terribly, terribly disillusioned. But what sort of response are you getting as you're going around the country with this message?
Pretty good, especially from kids. I talk to a lot of college kids and high school kids, and went on some programs they watch, like The Daily Show and so forth, and they are sick and tired of this psychological orientation of their teachers, and they laugh at it. But they know, I mean, some of them know they've been burdened with this. It's really a depressing philosophy. That's the thing, the irony. It's supposed to be about happiness and feeling good, and it's depressing. And we show that, we think, pretty persuasively. So it's not hard. That's my best audience, I would say, is young people. There are some, but there are many that are heavily invested in the therapeutic culture. You know, if you don't sit down and figure out everything that happened in this trauma of, you know, your psyche from age 3 to 6, your Oedipal dramas and all, if you don't work that out and dwell on it, you're going to be in big trouble. We just simply ask, where's the evidence for that? And there's plenty of evidence that, you know, there have been many people who've been, you know, think of Woody Allen. He was in therapy his entire life. It doesn't necessarily make you more reasonable or happier.
All right, and of course, I think that the point that you make right now is that a lot of our children are a lot smarter than the people who are teaching them. Children, you know, have always had a sense, you know, that they need to be competitive. They need, at least some of them need to try to get, you know, improve themselves. And of course, you point out that there, you see these books about, oh, how all these girls are falling apart, and you talk about this, that they're all really on the verge of a psychological breakdown. And it really isn't true.
Oh, there's been one bestseller after another, and these authors go on, they're invited on to the Oprah Show and Good Morning America. Like, we had a book about a nation of Ophelias, and then there was a professor at Harvard that said, no, it's not girls, it's boys, and they claimed that the vast numbers of these kids, a majority, were crashing and burning, depressed, you know, just some horrible psychological state. It turns out to be nonsense. It's true of a small percentage. Again, I keep just dwelling on that there's maybe up to 6% in any age group, you'll find seriously afflicted people. And you can get a little higher if you include minor problems that may or may not respond to therapy. But the vast majority of kids and adults are mentally sound, healthy, and strong, and even happy. We've seen, we cite a lot of evidence from studies like the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago routinely asks Americans, including young Americans, about their mental health, their state of their emotions and their happiness. People are claim to be extremely happy or very happy.
And I thought there was one survey they had, and I think it was 87% of boys were pretty happy or extremely happy. You know, these kids are not as mixed up as the psychiatrists and the media would like to have us believe.
That's right. We exaggerate their vulnerability, then we treat them as if they're fragile hothouse flowers, and then they're ill-prepared for the world outside. And again, you just are not doing them any favors, wrapping them in cotton wool, treating them as if they're made of spun glass, and, you know, losing at dodgeball. They're going to shatter into thousands of pieces.
I bet you're not going to get invited to come onto Oprah's the program.
You know, it's sad, because it would be really good if we could have, my co-author is a psychiatrist, Yale Medical School psychiatrist. I'm a philosophy professor. We've done, you know, responsible research. It's empirically based in scholarship, much more than all these other books, which they've turned into huge sellers, by William Pollack and the Ophelia books and so forth. Those are pop psychology at its worst. And yet, I'm sad to say, some of our most popular television programs seem to just, you know, really be taken in by these books, which are based on spurious research, sometimes no research at all. In the case of the Ophelia book, Reviving Ophelia, it was based on, largely on anecdotes from the practice of a clinical psychologist, girls she met in her office. That's the clinician's illusion, that you treat so many people who are sick, you forget what healthy people look like. You forget that most people are not going to psychologists.
And they try to give us the idea that we're, you know, most people live lives of quiet desperation, that no good deed will ever go unpunished. And that really isn't true. We
it's
live in a wonderful world. We just
most of our lives are complicated, but overall, people, especially in this country, we're blessed to live in this country with so many opportunities and so much good in it. Most people are content, or better.
Thank
but you.
You
won't hear that from the top psychologist.
God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.
Our four-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. Or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day as we reach out across America in almost 60 outlets, bringing people the information you're not going to get from regular channels. Now, let me point out, what's going on in our schools is not happening by accident. There really are evil people who would actually harm our children. And you need only to read the writings of Bertrand Russell in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, where he talks about how they're going to mold the personalities of our children by diet injections and injunctions. We will mold the personality so that the children will have the personality that the state wants, and talks about how special breeding and how breeding children for the cannon fodder, how you will have, of course, one breed will be the ruling class, another breed will be the common people. How we need, of course, a major epidemic to sweep the world every generation so we can kill off enough people so that it won't matter how many children are born into the world. There really are evil and wicked people. Now, if you'd like to read those pages from Bertrand Russell's book, they're included in my syllabus, The Hidden Agenda. It takes you into the background, of course, of water fluoridation, but you'll actually get there. Congressional testimony, we got copies from the government, congressional testimony by Dr. MacArthur, who in 1969 asked for $10 million so they could create a new disease, an absolutely new disease. They had the ability in 1969 to create new diseases. They'd been working on this for many decades. And now they could create a new disease for there'd be no means of immunity, and of course it would be another means of mass killing. And there were some people who thought they shouldn't do it, but they wanted to do it anyway. And 10 years later, why? And the homosexuals who were foolish enough to take the experimental vaccine, vaccine for hepatitis given in San Francisco, 75% of them came down with AIDS. Did that happen just by accident, or the fact that it was in the areas of Africa, where, of course, they took the same experimental hepatitis B vaccine, and that's where the AIDS epidemic broke out? Was that an accident, or was it by intention? Are there really people that like to kill off large numbers of people? Why are blacks so prone to get this disease? Why, it has genetically engineered. They can genetically engineer diseases today. If you'd like to get our hidden agenda syllabus, and of course you can get with that my talk on fluoride and toxicity in the drinking water, but it covers, of course, the whole world population control agenda, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I hope you'll want to get the hidden agenda syllabus and or the talk on fluoride toxicity. We also have our talk on the coming financial crisis. It's a talk we gave about six weeks or so ago in Southern California. But we'll give you the information you need to understand the occult forces behind the world monetary system that are moving us towards a financial collapse here in the United States. Again, that would be on fluoride toxicity, the DPD. The syllabus that goes with that is, of course, the hidden agenda. You can get either one separately, but we hope you'll get them together because you'll get a lower price. And then, of course, my talk on the financial crisis, the coming financial crisis. And then, of course, we hope you'll want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because it will help you tying this all together. And then, of course, you should get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3, the 4, or the 10-hour version. I will tell you that you will never look at the world through the same eyes again after you've seen the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And you'll understand the homosexual movement. You'll understand Alfred Kinsey. You'll understand Timothy Leary and the drug movement. And you'll understand why pornography is so prevalent in our society today. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.